women, so I gathered.
Brody was also growing suspicious of the man.
You got something to say, pal?
Only this.
He paused and licked his lips with his tongue.
The women? Them over there?
Ryan looked to where Eric was pointing and saw six women huddled together in a circle. Two of the women waved at him. Ryan waved back.
They're grateful for what you've done, and they want you to know they'll be cheering for you today.
Thanks.
And they wanted me to give you this.
He held out his fist, turned his fingers over to catch the sun, and opened his hand. In his palm, a shiny bit of metal glinted in the morning sunlight.
Brass knuckles.
I've been keeping them in case Purvis ever wanted to roll me. I doubt I would have stopped him, but I might at least have put up a good fight.
Ryan took the brass knuckles from Eric and slipped them over the fingers of his right hand.
Weapons like this are allowed?
Brody nodded.
The others will be trying to bring everything they can in with them, too, from spikes to knife blades.
What about the sec men?
They'll be looking the other way.
Ryan nodded, pressing his brass-ringed fist into the palm of his left hand. It would certainly do some damage, and it was comfortable enough that he could still hold a sword or club in his right hand while the knuckles were on his fingers.
Thank you. To you and the ladies. No, thank you, sir. Today's been almost like a holiday without that bastard Purvis around. So even if you get chilled in the arena, you've already done us a good deed.
You're welcome, I think. Clarissa brought Jack and Dean down to the river, where the water ran fast in a swirling froth of water and foam.
They have fish here?
No, not here.
Clarissa gestured across the river.
There's a whirlpool on the other side. With the lower water level, the fish get trapped inside it, swirling around and around. We've tried to catch them all sorts of ways, with their bare hands and with sharpened sticks, but the fish are too fast.
They began walking across the river, the water being just low enough for them to be able to make it on foot, if they were careful.
And we're supposed to shoot them?
Do you see any other food around?
No, but I... Whoa!
Dean slipped on the rocks and fell under the water.
Dean!
He was hanging onto a jutting rock with both hands, the flow of water trying to push him downstream.
I can't pull myself up!
He swallowed a mouthful of water in the process of answering. Jack took off his coat and extended his left hand to Clarissa.
Grab hand!
She took it. He then extended his arms and took one sleeve of his jacket in his right hand. He swung the jacket toward Dean, so the other sleeve fell near the rock he was clutching. Dean reached for the jacket, which was fluttering in the flow of water, but when he let go of the rock with one hand, he was nearly swept away by the river. He was forced to grab hold again with two hands.
Jack, look!
Jack glanced downstream and saw what looked like rocks moving against the flow.
What is it?
A muty fish. A big one. Muskie or salmon. Maybe even a muty sturgeon.
The fish was getting closer. Its huge mouth opened wide to catch everything the river sent its way. It scooped up dead fish and other refuse without ever having to move more than a few dozen feet left or right. If Dean let go, he'd be swept away by the water into the fish's belly in seconds.
Hang on, Dean!
Jack kept trying to work his jacket into position, but he was short by a couple of feet.
Give me pants!
Without hesitation, Clarissa slid off her pants, stepped out of them, and tied one of the legs to Jack's jacket sleeve. Then she held Jack's arm while he tried reaching Dean. This time, the pant leg landed over Dean's hands. With a quick movement of his right hand, the boy grabbed the pant leg. Then, with it securely wrapped around his wrist, he let go of the rock, straining against the current.
Pull! Jack the fish!
The albino team looked past Dean. The fish was swimming against the current toward their fallen friend, as if Dean were bait at the end of a line. They continued to reel him in, but they couldn't pull fast enough. With a mighty flip of its tail, the fish lunged forward, its upper lip brushing up against Dean's boots.
Hurry up!
The fish kept coming, and Jack realized that even after they pulled Dean in, the muty fish would still be able to move upstream against the current with its belly against the bottom and water flowing through its gills to breathe. The shallow rapids weren't any protection against this fish. They were all in danger.
Take jacket!
Jack handed the sleeve to Clarissa so she could hold on to it while he pulled his .357 Colt Python from its holster. Dean, seeing the big 6-inch barrel of Jack's blaster pointed in his direction, ducked his head, plunging it under the water to get it out of the way. Jack fired off two rounds that smashed into the fish's great head. The powerful rounds punched holes in its skull and tore big bloody swaths through its soft body. Chunks of blood, brain, and meaty flesh exploded out the sides of its body. But it was still moving for Dean. Jack squeezed off another two rounds, catching the fish in one of its eyes with the first shot and blowing away the entire left side of its mouth with the other. Blood began to turn the river around the fish a pinkish red, and it began to lose the battle with the current and slowly started to float away. With the danger of the fish now gone, Clarissa and Jack were able to quickly pull Dean to safety, and the boy began to squeeze water out of his clothes.
I've done a lot of things in the time I've been with Dad, but I never thought I'd be used as fish bait.
Jack stood in silence, watching the big fish float downriver toward the lake.
Fish getting away. Not till JB.
Clarissa began putting on her sodden pants.
Well, we can always try the whirlpool. That was the plan in the beginning anyway.
But then the fish was caught by an eddy in the river, and it turned sideways against the current. As if by design, it washed up on the north shore, across the river from Whirlpool Point. They'd be able to cut as many steaks as they wanted out of the fish, and the carcass would feed Clarissa's Mutie clan for days to come.
Hot pipe! We will tell JB all about it. He won't believe a word of it, but we can tell him.
They hurried across the river. The door to the underground garage rolled up, and Jack, Clarissa, and Dean slid under the bottom gap.
Where's the fish?
Floating in the river.
Doc rubbed his empty stomach.
Are you saying that you did not chill a single fish?
Jack indicated the burlap sack slung over his shoulder.
Chilled one fish.
JB worked to loosen something in the cockpit of the P-39.
Just one, huh? Don't tell me. All the rest got away, right?
Dean smiled.
Nope. After Jack chilled that one fish, it floated downriver and we didn't need to chill any more.
Washed up on shore.
Jack dropped the sack at Doc's feet.
But a half-ton fish was too big to bring back here, so we decided to bring back 50 pounds of fish steaks instead. Hope that's enough.
Doc was speechless for a moment.
What sort of fish?
Clarissa held up one of the neatly cut slabs.
Sturgeon?
Is that good eating?
No worry. When finished, tastes like chicken.
I've heard that before.
Brody rejoined his crew later in the afternoon.
I bet all the jack I had on you at 10-1. You're sitting at 8-1 now.
Huh. What about you?
Me? Something like 25-1. But that's just being kind. No one's put any jack on me. I wouldn't even put any on me. Come to think of it, nobody's put any jack on you either, except for the people in this crew. They've all bet on you.
A sec man approached them from behind. Ryan's muscles tensed, ready to strike the man or his blaster if the situation required it.
All right, you two. Your work is over for today. Catch a ride on the wag back to your quarters. The Baron wants you rested up for tonight's entertainment.
The two men stopped pulling weeds and headed for the wag. Ryan didn't like to chill anything for sport, but it appeared he wouldn't be having any choice in the matter this time around. Baron Fogg sat back in his chair behind his desk, looking through the pages of another one of his tattered pre-dark skin mags. Norman Bauer was waiting patiently for him to finish with it.
19 have signed up for the contest, Baron.
The Baron didn't lift his eyes from the page.
Who is favored?
Mog. 1-4.
The Baron nodded.
Who's got the best odds next after Mog?
The One-Eyed Outlander. 8-1.
That seemed to catch the Baron's interest.
The Outlander has signed up to save his woman, has he? Oh, that's precious.
From what the sec men tell me, this One-Eye is a very dangerous man.
Really?
We can't prove it, since none of the slaves will come forward, but the talk is that the One-Eye must have chilled Purvis in the shower his first day in the orchards.
Baron Fogg finally put aside his mag.
In the shower?
Everyone says Purvis slipped on some soap, but he and the One-Eye were the last ones in the showers.
He chilled Purvis in the shower with his bare hands?
Smashed his head on the tiles, it would seem.
The Baron was excited by the thought of it.
Oh. Tell Mog's crew that there'll be a week free of work for the man who chills the One-Eye.
There was a knock on the door to the nursery.
Come.
Mildred was watching over Jasmine, making sure the woman was comfortable. She was still experiencing afterpains in the abdomen and was showing a bloody vaginal discharge. The latter was beginning to clear up, but the pains were still as sharp as ever. And then there was the depression that followed delivery, made worse by the absence of the newborn child. A Sekhman entered the nursery first, followed by Christy Roth.
Christy, what brings you here?
The Baron. He wants me to get checked out to make sure I'm healthy for the winter.
Girl.